Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for February 25th, 2021. We'll get right into it here. We're still thinking that the market will be choppy to up this week, and I think it is. We're looking at the possibility of some more difficulties or choppiness in March and ending up in that 373 area. We'll just have to see how that goes. The important thing, again, to mention about that possibility is this is not a broad-based correction signal. It is much more of a simply we're overbought and correcting the indicator signal, which is, in fact, what we are doing. We notice, again, our favorite speculative sector, which we mentioned in December, energy, is still doing quite well. And tech, which we've been a little bit down on for, frankly, too long, but we have been a little bit down on it, is technology, and that you're starting to see some pullbacks in that. And more importantly, you're seeing recycles in these daily stochastics. You know, and as we see complete recycles in things, we're going to start to look to add them in. You know, we could have a bounce the first part of March and then another pullback. But if we do close below that 373 area, we will basically be in an all clear mode for the next two quarters. And that's really why we want to see that. You know, it's, you know, we may be making a mistake in that our desire for that is outweighing the analysis. Don't think so, but that's a possibility. But, you know, the stock market overall still looks strong to us. In the bond market, we are very, very near that TNX 15, which translates to a rate of 1.5 on the 10-year. Remember, with those interest rate indexes, the methodology that we utilize is you move the decimal point over one to the left, and that is your rate. We expect a reversal in bonds next month. Obviously, we could be wrong, but as we said when we did our piece in the weekly, we've got a great benchmark here, as trading much above 15 on TNX would pretty much say that we're blowing it here and making a mistake. And we do expect higher rates next year, so this is sort of a respite. But just be aware, if you're super long these bonds and want to get out, and this is a good opportunity coming to do that, as rates should fall then and prices rise. We look at the international markets. We're looking at EFA even as we sit here. We just don't see a lot of real positives in the developed sector versus emerging. Emerging still looks better to us. We, as mentioned, have suggested that the reason for that is weak European countries. And I'm going to make the point again one more time. When I look at EWI on a long-term basis, you know, it's still weak and near the 2009 lows. When we look at EWP, it's still weak and much nearer the 2009 lows than the 2019 highs. So the question that we're asking ourselves from a fundamental perspective is, you know, is there anything about the pandemic that's going to increase the chances that those markets are going to go up? And if there isn't, I just don't think develop's going to hit on all cylinders. We still like emerging, as we said. We still like Japan. There's all sorts of reasons not to buy Japan, by the way. They're buying ETFs, all this stuff. But the fact is, it looks like a secular change in that market is going on. And so we would be using Japanese ETFs and funds. And, of course, China, the one thing, again, we've talked about is using PGJ versus CQQQ. Get a little bit of the emphasis away from technology on that. Our strategy of using a combination of GXC and PGJ has worked pretty well for us. Let's talk about gold. Gold may also reverse next month. Again, you're seeing a lot of things going on here as far as month-end maneuvering right now, so that people's portfolios, the funds and stuff, look good for the end of the month. Gold is oversold. It's on a buy signal on the daily on GLD once again. And let me just take a quick look at the weekly, which I have not done this morning. I've been preparing some other stuff. The weekly is once again oversold after a buy recycle that did not produce much of anything. This next buy recycle, if we get it, could be decent. And GLD is right on support in this 164 to 166 area. So there could be a reversal. But frankly, if we're going to play commodities and stuff, we would much rather play stuff like ExxonMobil or Chevron or something with a yield that's also in the commodities area. We still think that energy looks good, and we're going to talk about that in the weekly at some length. Let's see, is there anything else that's really pressing here? I don't think so. Let's pass the call over to Jeff Garbaz here. Jeff, if you could chime in with some questions and stuff.
Hey, Fred. How are you?
Hey, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Good. So you were working in 1987, correct?
Correct.
And I was in my coming up on my first year anniversary by like 2 months. And I remember the whole October scenario.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what got blamed for it was portfolio insurance, correct?
Correct. That's what got blamed for it. I don't think that is correct.
What do you think? What do you think the cause was then of 87?
Jeff, I think the cause, and I'm going to preface this by saying, because I think this is the cause of this, I don't think it's repeatable. But I had been in the business for 4 years. I was already interested in and working with technical analysis, which I first started working on in 1983, 1984 at Bear Band Securities with Sed Moses and Tom Tank and some guys that have gone on to be very successful. And I was a broker at Dean Witter, and I was following a lot of the advisory services. And one of the things that came out right on the Friday before the Monday of 1987 was a bunch of newsletter writers, including Bob Neurock, who was huge then, Bob Prechter, who was huge then, and some others, saying that now that the Dow's 50-day moving average went below the 200-day moving average, switch to a money market fund from your stock funds. And my belief is that switching caused the market to open down on Monday and then caused some of the portfolio insurance stuff to go off. So it was really mutual fund switching for me that did it. The other thing that we should all remember very carefully about 1987 is that the market actually peaked in August and went down into October the same amount that the market crashed on October 19th, 1987. In other words, we had a pullback from roughly 3,600 to roughly 1,700 at the lows on the Dow. That's on the Dow Industrials, people, for those of you who are new. But half of that happened before the big give-up day on October 19th, 1987. So, Jeff, that's a sort of a long-winded answer to suggest that conditions are probably not the same now as they were. And Jeff, go ahead.
Bob Robbins here.
Bob.
I just wanted to toss out two quick causes. The market had gone up 25% compound annually for 5 years, which, as you can imagine, is clearly unsustainable.
It turned out to be, yes, Bob.
And the second thing, and even more important, was that the Federal Reserve monetary policy changed from Volcker to Greenspan in August, and that marked the high. And Greenspan hit the brakes pretty hard after Volcker had been, on the gas pedal for too long. And when he hit the brakes, the market reacted severely.
So Bob, this is actually good. Because this gets to where I'm kind of going with this stuff. So to your point, 5 years, 25%, right?
Right. That's the same thing that the market did in the in the roaring 20s up to the 1929 high, 25%
yeah.
compound annually for
well,
5 years. That's
well, what about this then? Since February of 2009, we're now up 431% in, let's call it, 11 years, which blows away a 25% return per annum for 5 years. And we really have had no correction. We had a sideways period in, let's call it, 2015 and 16, but those were obviously very volatile periods within that. So isn't this potentially a lot bigger than that? And here's the reason so answer that first, then I'll tell you why I'm asking this.
Okay, so the market in how many years is up how much percent?
430, the S&P is up 431% since February of 2009, so basically 11 years.
Okay. I'm doing a compound 1.5. Y to the X, 0.09. Yeah, my calculator's not working right, but I don't know that that's 25% a year. If it is, then
well, it's much. I mean, obviously to compound it, but if you just take 431 and divide it by 11, you're at a much higher number than 25%.
Yeah. Hang on.
So let me tell you why I'm asked. I mean, I would love to know what the compounding number is. I hear you on that. I get that.
Yeah.
But here's why I'm asking this. Thomas Peterffy, do you know who he is?
No, I don't.
Thomas Peterffy is a guy who created Interactive Brokers, and he's also considered by some.
Yeah.
He's Hungarian. He's a brilliant guy. Some people also consider him to be the guy who invented Black-Scholes as well. I've heard him speak two times, and I'm going to put him on my Twitter stuff in a minute so people can go listen to it and watch him. One was on January 28th, which is after the 27th, which I call the great deleveraging day of hedge funds, where they were forced to cover shorts and to sell longs because they got offsides with their amount of leverage. And then last Thursday, he also talked. And it was in reference partially to that event and also partially to what's happening with GameStop. And obviously yesterday in 2 hours, we saw, you know, a multi-billion dollar company go up 100%, and now it's up even more. So there's something wrong with the system. And literally this is his quote: "We're dangerously close to the collapse of the entire system." So that's why I'm asking about the 87 comparison. And
okay, I've got the number now. 25%
okay.
compound annually for 11 years is 11.6 times your original investment, and we haven't done that. We're more like 6 times, so it's not nearly as heady.
Okay.
And if you want my take on why the market can go up another 25% in the next 2 years, it's because if you look at the 130-year history of the stock market, price-earnings ratio in relation to the long-term treasury interest rate, you'll see that when interest rates are this low, price-earnings ratios went into the upper 20s, and we're around 22 right now. And that may go back into the 1920s and back into the 1880s or 90s.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact dates, but I believe it's comparable because we have digital technological deflation that's not measured in the inflation numbers. So
I buy into that. And
experiencing some degree of zero prices when you adjust for technology and digital deflation. And that's a reason why the interest rates are so incredibly low.
So how much do you then consider, and Fred, same to you, but this is actually a fascinating, and I'm getting to the end of it, and I'm basically going to stop there and open it up to questions. How much do you consider 87 to be like a psychological event as opposed to like a structural problem?
It was just a blow-off. I mean, you ended 1987 unchanged in the market averages.
Yeah.
after the crash of 87. It just simply retraced an unsustainable last leg of that 25% compound five-year euphoria.
Yep.
And
but
we did not even have a recession. We didn't even have a growth recession. That's
correct.
The incredible thing about that.
Correct.
It was an excess and a change in Federal Reserve monetary policy that was very sudden.
Yep. So the question is, could the Fed make the same mistake again right now? This is a Bob question. And then Fred, I'm going to come back to you. We'll get back on track.
But it's
great that you jumped in on this. This is awesome. So rates on the 10-year are now approaching 1.5%, and if they continue to let them fly here, so to speak, and rates keep going up, do we ultimately potentially have another Fed mistake on the horizon, kind of like what Greenspan made? Is there the potential for that?
Yes. Last year, according to Ed Yardini on CNBC 2 days ago, he said that the Federal Reserve basically, this is his exact word, the Federal Reserve basically bought all of the Treasury's notes and bonds issued last year. Okay? So that's not going to happen. That's not in the long term. That's unsustainable. When that changes in a year or two, doesn't that suggest, and I don't know, I'm not an analyst of the funds flows of the Fed or the balance sheet or all this
yep.
stuff, but it's just on the surface of it, it suggests to me that interest rates can go much higher than they are right now because the Fed's still doing that.
Yep.
And when they stop doing it, wouldn't you think you'd have quite a surge in interest rates?
Yep.
So I'm just wondering if they don't go to 2%, toward the latter part of next year, and that really upsets the market.
Correct. And the companies, obviously, they're going to get most impacted by that are going to be highly leveraged companies where the cost of capital is an important factor, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Very, very high PE stocks.
Or no PE that has a high growth rate, too.
Correct.
Okay. Hey, Fred, so let me come back to one last thing. Hey, Bob, that was awesome. I'm going to say, Fred, that this is a to-be-continued discussion down the road.
No, absolutely. And I want to thank Bob. For those of you on the call who don't know outside of Atlanta, Bob is one of my mentors. He hired me initially as a technician in 1990 or 1989. And anything Bob wants to say, I'll listen to as long as he wants to say it. He's a brilliant man and a great money manager.
Plus, it was the three amigos, the three former Robinson Humphrey people.
we're still a great team.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, so Fred, I got one last question for you. So when I went through Chartbook last night and looked at stuff, I was blown away by the return on the industrials, okay?
Yeah.
So take a look at PRN, which is the Dorsey Momentum ETF on industrials, and it's just it's amazing. So do you continue to ride the industrials for now?
I think you do, Jeff. That's one of my absolute favorite sectors. We're overweight that in our sector models, and it's doing a great job for us.
Okay. And then the other thing is, like, deterioration, PUI, which is Dorsey's utilities, is definitely kind of struggling here. And it's kind of making a bit of a descending triangle. Is that fair for talking about, like, a slight one?
Yes, that is fair. It's not a complete formation, but it is fair.
Okay. And then also look at PTH, which is their momentum healthcare too. That's I don't really consider that to be that's more maybe a left shoulder head, and maybe we got to make a right shoulder on it. But
yeah.
Thoughts on utilities and healthcare, which are kind of lagging here.
Both are lagging. Both are equal weight sectors to me. I still think utilities are being bought by institutions that are looking for income, and they're not broadcasting that in any way. But I do think that's going on, and so that's why I'm equal on both of those. We're going to cover equal weight energy in the weekly, And again, one of the things to look at here, and I'm going to tie this into the last discussion, look at the performance of RYE versus XLE for just a minute and realize that the recommendation we've had of using RYE, which has been up a bit more, and one of the big stocks in XLE, either Chevron or Exxon for income, has actually been a very good recommendation. I want to revisit the 1987 discussion for one quick second, and that is, I've gone back and looked at that, Jeff. I've looked at the advanced decline figures and those sorts of things, and those did lag in a way they're not lagging now, before we peaked in August. Okay, it wasn't as pronounced as it was in 99-2000. But it was still there, okay? So as we used to say when Bob and I were kids, you bet your bippy I am looking at that every single week to look at those weekly advanced decline numbers. When we start to see that, that's going to be an early warning sign.
Yeah, what's interesting is the number of returns of stocks. Like, to your point, I agree with you 1,000%. And any advanced decline you look at, we like to look at both daily advanced decline lines and daily weekly advanced decline lines in Chartroom. And
yeah,
to your point, they look great. And the most interesting thing of all is, I saw this last night on Sarepta. It's only one of two stocks that's down more than 50% for the year, and yet there are like 700 stocks that are up more than 50% for the year so far. That shows
yeah.
you strength. It doesn't show you that you're topping out like you did in August of 87.
Yeah. Now, the thing that we may really see, and again, this is something to watch, I don't know about other states, but I know that the vaccine rollout in Georgia is broadening out, and Governor Kemp has said as recently as yesterday that they're soon going to expand the criteria for vaccines. So that it's going to be more people than over 65 and essential workers. As that starts happening, the market, we all know that the market is a discounting mechanism, okay? And obviously the market is the market is discounting something, but my guess is it's discounting a reopening and a demand surge. What if the market starts to sell off as we see that reopening and demand surge? Pent-up demand. We certainly have to watch for that. The indicators, as we've talked about, have suggested that we would see some sort of a pullback here. And it looks like, I'm still holding out for a real pullback and not a sideways pullback that corrects the indicators. But if it is a sideways pullback that corrects the indicators, we may see a difficult second and third quarter instead of a really strong second and third quarter. But we won't know that really until the end of March. It's something to be on the lookout for. I want to say one more thing, Jeff, and then we'll open for questions unless you have anything else.
Nope, I'm good.
I just got a text from one of our clients saying, "Wow, Fred, the Thursday calls have always been terrific, but with Bob Robbins in the lineup, this is better than the 1927 Yankees." So,
there you go.
And I agree. But anyway, let's open for questions for me, for Jeff, or for Bob, if there are any questions for Bob. I'm sure Bob's still around.
This is Scott.
Scott.
I'm going to kind of not necessarily ask for charts, but I read a piece yesterday which was very eye-opening for me, it was from our good friend Jim Paulson. I just sort of took some bullet points and we'll throw it out there and see what you guys think about it. Talking about all these different puts to the market. You've got the policy put, you've got a vaccine put, which you touched on. You've got earnings per share revival put. He's actually looking for 8% GDP and $200 EPS, which puts it at a 19.5 PE. The no inventory put, the savings put, huge savings on the sideline, bubble watch worry put, which we kind of touched on last 5-10 minutes, dry powder put, which is basically the tremendous overcrowding in bonds, which are going to move to stocks, the obvious recovery put, and lastly, the low yield put. So these, in my opinion, I've seen nowhere else all those types of puts, if you will, to put it in that context. So any thoughts on that?
Well, Bob, do you want to go first on that one?
Oh, my God. I'm not much on puts. I'll leave that for you.
Okay. Well, Scott, again, you know, normally the market does peak when everything looks about as good as it can get. So the contrarian in me suggests that, you know, we have to watch as these things come to pass and hope that none of the things that you're discussing actually screw up. And the other thing I would mention, and we'll see it again in the monthly, which I'm going to publish this week, my sentiment indicator, Investors Intelligence Percent Bears Indicator, is certainly negative, and put call still seems to be pricing in perfection. So the risk there is if anything goes awry. But I will say this, Scott, and we have to acknowledge this. Any bear out there that doesn't acknowledge this, in my opinion, is making a horrible mistake. Until we see technical weakness in the internals, like the advanced decline line, like new highs, new lows, like some of these other things that we follow, this is an up market. This is not a market where you want to sell everything and move to the sidelines. This is still a strong environment. You know, what you could say is with new lows sitting around 23, 24, there's really nowhere to go but up on that. But again, the relationship between new highs and how that works is what we're watching. There's just not a lot wrong here. And, of course, that makes me nervous. But there really isn't a lot wrong here.
I guess his point is, and I sort of opened my eyes to it, we've all sort of realized each one of these effects. We don't have to call it a put, but that's just sort of a tart way of saying it. Each of these are very much accepted that are out there. I mean, $1.9 trillion coming around the corner. Hello? I mean, just liquidity is insane. And opening up, I mean, the market's kind of telling us, I think, with the interest rates moving up, that COVID's kind of over the next month or two, God willing. So I just think that most people don't really see, this is not front page news, his list of the quote-unquote puts. So that's just food for thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to add to that is as long as the economy is still strongly recovering some of the lost ground, then it's totally consistent with Fred's bullish overall scenario for the market for the next several months. However, these negatives, like the wasting the bulk of the $1.9 trillion, is unsettling, and it's unsettling in the prospect that later on this year, probably in the fall, the market may be discounting the slam down of higher taxes that will be coming 6 months ahead of that. So I think that's a worry, a big worry, is the tax beat down of raising all kinds of taxes on business and entrepreneurs, small business, big business, and all of them. And lastly, I would just keep your eyes on the military situation in the world. New presidents get tested. This one has been tested and has been responding by either ignoring or a little wrist slap response, which is not anything to deter China from getting more and more aggressive, and that might create some sort of brushfire conflict that causes the market to correct 3-7% in this seasonally weak period from now into late April and May. That's the second seasonally weakest time of the year.
And let me thank
you, Fred.
Bob.
Can I jump in real quick? Just a
sure.
very quickie question for Bob.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Bob. So TARP was only $500 billion. So if you look at this latest thing, combine it with everything last year, the amount of spending is like unprecedented. I mean, it's not even helicopter money. It's a fleet of helicopters. You know, so at some point, don't we have to pay a price for that?
Yep, we sure do, and it's down the road. But in the meantime, the economy is recovering from a depression, and it's still roaring ahead. And I think you're going to see that be the overwhelming factor. But yes, down the road, at some point, you wonder when, you know, you remember we got down, one of the rating agencies downgraded U.S. Treasury debt from AAA to AA+. you wonder where they are now with the national debt doubling and whatever. This $1.9 trillion is just, a disgrace. $350 billion is just a handout to fiscally irresponsible state and state governments that are deep into the red. $129 billion is to teachers' unions and doesn't even happen until next year, 2022, so it's not a COVID stimulus. $86 billion is to bail out union pensions. $800 million food for foreign countries, that's more symbolic. $246 billion in relation to the unemployment situation. I don't really know exactly, but it's really spread around, and a lot of it is pretty wasteful, and not much of it really goes to stimulate the economy right now when we need it.
Hey, so Fred, I'll jump off in 1 second, but this is still a Bob type question. Have you ever looked at, like, you know, when we came out of the 57-58 flu, we then had like 8 quarters in a row of really strong GDP growth, and then I don't know what happened to the market as we kind of came to the end of that period. But could it just be that the growth is going to be so strong because we've only been operating at like 50% that it's almost impossible to stop the market?
Well, this is the strongest fiscal monetary stimulus by far, by multiple in U.S. history. I mean, by multiple.
Yeah.
This isn't just 50% stronger. This is 200, 300, 400%. I don't even know what the numbers are, but they're humongous. So when it's removed, you can have quite a unsettling adjustment to that in the markets. So I think, you know, the markets are going to be volatile rather than pretty nicely uptrending for the next several months. But starting about after Labor Day and going on for a couple of years, the markets may be very unsettled by how this is conducted.
Okay, great. Hey, Fred, I'll turn back to you.
Yeah, and I just want to mention again, you know, one of the kickers to look for in the market is our small cap theme of small cap leading, which is certainly one way to gauge the effect of the recovery and the economic stimulus. If small cap starts to falter, and I don't think it will for the next 3 to 6 months, which fits in with what Bob was saying, we're in good shape. But if you see that small cap trade coming out of a recession start to falter, that is that will suggest some problems. And oddly enough, that trade did falter sooner rather than later after the 1958 flu. So, Jeff, that's something worth taking a look at. But let's see if there are any other questions from people. We've had a great conversation here, and thank God I'm not getting texts saying I have a question. But let's have any questions from anybody on stocks or any questions for Bob or myself or Jeff right away, please.
Yogesh,
how are you?
I'm good. My God, such a good discussion. Long time. I have one question for you and Bob and Jeff. That the on the one hand, we have price earning ratio, price to book, price to sales, all up historically highest level. sentiments are extreme. Put call ratio is not that good. And yet liquidity is so much everywhere. And still the fundamentals are good and GDP is improving. How does these two rhyme together, whether it's a matter of time, whether it is a that the price earning ratio will come down because of the price will go up and volumes will go up? Just a quick question to all of you.
Well, Fred, the audio was very muffled. I couldn't hear him.
Yogesh, let me try to answer that this way. One of the things that I always look for when I look at my technical indicators is how many points on the spider, say, a buy signal gives me versus how many points a sell signal gives me. And I will be very concerned if we start to see selling indications on some of the indicators that we follow. And as Bob has said, especially if they come around in that fall period, I will be looking and expecting greater than average declines from those signals, and hopefully we'll be proved wrong. But I think prudence would say that when we start to really see those, that the results of those signals could be worse, Yogesh. So, but right now we don't have them. But when we start to get them, that's something I'm going to be talking about as a cautionary note for us, so we don't give back some of the profits that we've made.
The one question following up with your explanation, the leadership, right? The GDP is likely to grow much faster than anybody expected. Earnings are going to do well. Has it brought consequences of a leadership change, or just the market will keep going and doesn't matter anything?
Yogesh, that's an interesting point, and it's something that I'm looking at. But again, I don't think it's what we need to really be looking at now. But yeah, real estate could definitely be one of the canaries in the coal mine. I hope I answered that, Yogesh. If not, I'll talk to you offline. Very good. Other questions?
Fred, a couple of talks, if that's okay?
Sure.
Apple.
I still think Apple is a fine uptrend on support at 120. And, you know, we've got a daily stochastic buy on it. So if you want to buy Apple here, I think you're okay to do that. But I don't think you're going to have a big runaway blow-off type move in Apple. I think it's going to rally to like 135 from here and then come back down. I'm looking at all these big sort of tech leaders as really trading ranges, Amazon, all that. I know Amazon's a local company for you, Steve.
Yeah. TRTN.
Triton. TRTN is in Nancy, Triton.
Yes.
Daily chart is still in good shape. Let me take a quick look at the weekly. You know, it's overbought. It's definitely a hold, and I'd buy any sort of daily stochastic recycle in this. They produced, like the one did in late January, really nice up moves, and the downs have not produced much. But right now it's a hold for me. A lot of support, 55, 57. If it can go sideways and you get that daily stochastic down into that area, that would be a great buying opportunity.
Okay. Charlie, Greg, Boy, David.
And that, let me again, overbought but not in any sort of sell mode. Steve, the only thing I would watch out for on that, if you look at the weekly chart, you've got a chance at a false breakout here, and that would probably be confirmed, say, below 1180, which is about a point from here. So I'd be a little careful if this fails and starts to go below 1180.
Okay. Mary, Umbrella, Fred, George.
And thank you again for not using the military call signs. This is a Japanese stock. It's traded extremely well. It's at resistance. And frankly, I'd buy any daily recycle on this. And Steve, I'd buy this now and above 550. I'd buy it with a view of 650 or so. The stock is trading extremely well, and so is Japan.
Okay. Okay. ACM.
Apple Charlie Mary.
Yes.
Let's see. I'm looking at the weekly again. No big problems with this daily or weekly. It's a hold until a recycle, but again, you're getting good moves on the recycles. So I say you stick with this. If you have a, if it's in a model and you have client money that hasn't gone into it, it's okay to start to put it in.
Okay. VRSK.
Victor, Robert, Fred. Cool cigarettes?
Sam instead of Fred.
Okay. VRSK. Steve, this is actually, one would say it's a value play because it's come down. Unless this gets above 175, I'd wait for the weekly to recycle. This could make it a good bit lower, say to 162.
Okay. Last two, one is Wells Fargo, WFC.
This stock has been a disappointment for me. I keep thinking it's going to do better, but it is doing okay. A lot of resistance at 40, and I think it could test it.
Okay. And then I have to ask about you.
Okay. You're right on that support that we thought might possibly hit at 106 if things got really bad. So above 110 to 112, you'll probably get a shot back to 125, but I wouldn't buy it until it does that. And much below 100, Steve, I don't know what the offering price on this when the stock came out was, the correct price, but if you start going much below 98, you've got a good shot at 75 to 80.
Okay.
Sorry to say.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. I really appreciate it as always.
Yes. Other questions? Other questions for me or Bob or Jeff?
Hey, Fred, Indigo, Nancy, Sam, George, INSG, and SIGO.
INSG and SIGO. You know, you're right on support, and your daily stochastic is just about to recycle. It's down in the 17-18 area. When that does, you can buy this stock. The weekly's a little overbought, so it may sort of consolidate between here and 20 or so, but that's a great range. And tradable. So if you buy it and it looks like it's not going to go through 20 and you sell it, I haven't killed you.
Excellent. And I just want to add one comment. You guys had a good discussion. Now, I would, you know, history usually repeats itself somewhat. I would think the crash that we had last year, you know, this coronavirus crash, was very similar, I guess, in magnitude and almost speed to the crash of 87. Obviously, we had the circuit breakers last year, so it kind of delayed it for a few weeks versus the few days, the crash of 87, you know. So, and the way it recovered was very similar. You know, we went back to new all-time highs within months in 87. You know, I think, was it about 4 months or something? And then, you know,
Actually,
last year
it was in 88, and there was one key difference, which was one of the things that screwed me up initially on this was, believe it or not, you had new closing lows on the S&P and stuff to create the sort of momentum divergences that would have supported a big rally. And we didn't have those this time. It was much more of a V. So that, to me, was the key difference.
Yeah, I think we had a lot more Fed intervention this time, a lot quicker than anything we saw in 87. I don't think the Fed really did a whole lot.
No, because, again, Bob's point, and Bob will laugh, I can even send it to him if he wants. I still have the 1987 August edition of Forbes with Greenspan on the cover saying, you know, this is what we think is going to happen sort of thing. I still have the actual magazine, and I even know where it is. It's in storage. So,
good. All
good. Right. Other questions? Thank you for your question. Other questions? Very well. Let's say going once. Going twice.
Fred.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
Good.
I got a couple for you. One you I put into the chart book, but they referenced that it was an ETF, so I wasn't sure whether that was correct. So
let me
it's
see
PW.
It again. Which one?
PW. Paul Walter.
Paul Walter, thank you. That's a hard one. It's a REIT. I don't know if it's an ETF or not, but it's a REIT.
Correct. It's like a REIT. It's like a mini, just so you know, it's like a mini IIPR, which is the second stock I want you to give opine on.
Sure.
So it's a really small one, obviously. Really.
Yeah,
small.
This is interesting, and I did not know that this was here, but this, you know, you think about it, this would be, IIPR is ripe for competition. And this is definitely up as long as it's above. Let me do a couple of let me make one change here.
Please.
In chart patterns, in charting packages. As long as it stays above 33, it's a nice up pattern, and it probably won't go below 35. So I could buy this here if you wanted to. And it's certainly a hold, and you buy the next recycle. It's good. This is a good chart. And IIPR, if I can type in the symbol, has been a long-term favorite of mine. And I was, in fact, I just sent, I believe it was Bob last night, a little note saying, if this can get to 187 on IIPR, I would buy it. And I would, David, I would buy this right here. I would not hesitate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I could buy this, let me check one thing here, but because I'm getting some weird data here. Let me try something, and then I'll look at IIPR again on the weekly chart. If I could buy this right here, I would do it. I would buy it today.
So let me just, just from an education perspective, so if I'm looking at this, you know, I'm looking at the stochastics, let's say, and the I'm just wondering what's making you say, okay, yeah, no, even though, because the stochastics are clearly down, it's not, so daily isn't recycling, so just educate me from that perspective.
I've got
what's
a
making
lot
you say,
of support
yeah, buy it?
Coming in on the lows of, let's say, I'm not sure what the date is on this. January 10th, which was a significant low, and you're right near that the breakout, which was a little bit of a gap on 12/13, the low of which was 163, but the high of which was 192. So I would average those, and it comes out close enough to this area that I would be willing to try this year.
Got it. Okay. And just coming back to PW for a second, same type of question, like what's making you say, hey, yeah, this is good, given that, you know, if I'm looking at the daily stochastic, clearly it's still in a downtrend and not recycling yet. So again, I just want to understand, your head a little bit.
Yeah, if this this isn't as nice looking in some ways as IIPR, but you know, I'm afraid if you do what you should do, which is wait to 35.5 on this, that it might not get there.
So right. It's very thinly traded.
Recommendation.
Right. It's very thinly traded, number one. And number two, they did in February, I don't know what date it is, but they did do like a secondary, like at 26.5, believe it or not, not too long ago. Anyway, that's that one. So I'll move on. But thank you. That's really
interestingly. This PW is interesting. It's certainly worth looking at for those of us. And we've been on IIPR on the call for God knows how long. I think we got it at 60. It was a recommendation from somebody
on the call that looked really, really strong and really, really good. Now, the other thing I would look at for everybody on the call here is Friday is the last trading day of the month. So if anyone is going to do any window dressing on things like bonds or any particular stock positions, you know, it's probably going to come between now and Friday afternoon. So, you know, play those. If something's down, like I'm looking to buy TLT myself for a trade to the upside, I'm waiting until the end of the month. Unless it closes back above 140 today. I bought a little bit at above 140 yesterday. If it can get back above 140 today, I'll add to it. But I'm not expecting any big changes there. The dollar, which we've been looking at, and we're down a little bit on, of course that's going to be down into the end of the month because everyone's negative on it. But some of these things might start to reverse at the end of the month. Gold, for example, if you're a gold buyer, we're not because of our accumulation models, but people are probably going to be bailing on gold at the end of the month, so because it's really sort of not done so well. So, you know, look at some of these things judiciously, but that's where we're going to want to be looking, I think, you know, some of these areas here on some of these things that might reverse between now and Friday.
Can I throw a couple more stocks at you?
Sure.
Okay. Sam Edgar C.
Okay, and let me again check that. That is, honestly, David, that's completely neutral, but you do have a stochastic recycle. So if you want to buy that, go ahead.
Okay. And this one, DS, was in the chart book. Interestingly, you were less like negative, I would say. Like it wasn't like totally negative, as in this stock, it's a blah blah blah. It was like neutral almost, but like you can go ahead and buy it. So I wanted to get your
moving averages have crossed to the upside, and the stochastic is halfway up. The problem is this may only go to 290, which would be a big move. And most people on the call can't buy $2-3 stocks, but this is viable if you want to try to run it up towards 290 to 3.
Okay. David Charlie Tom Happy.
Charlie Tom Happy. The minute that daily stochastic turns up, if you want to buy it because it's making higher lows here.
Okay, so wait a little bit. Obviously.
Yeah, or buy it at the end of the month if you want. But the difference between this one and the other one, Drive Shack, is this actually has a brand new cross on the daily moving averages going straight down that would imply a move to 15. If this buy doesn't work.
Okay, George, Larry, Nancy, George.
Repeat that one, please.
George, Larry, Nancy, George.
You garbled right at the first George.
Larry,
I got it. No,
Nancy.
I said the first time. It's Golog. Golar.
Yes.
Okay. You know, it's slightly neutral, but again, it is in slight buy mode. You may not get it up much beyond 13.5, 14, but if you really want to try it, this is the place.
Okay. Robert Frank Larry.
Robert Frank Larry. That's in sell mode, so I'd let it sit and see if the daily stochastic can come down some more.
Okay. And
the other thing, David, by the way, that I don't like about it, if you look at this as a candlestick, the high on this today is almost halfway up that big sell bar that we had yesterday. This would be a great place for it to stop. On some of these big sell days, you generally get halfway above and then fail. So with a negative stochastic, this is actually, if I owned this and was nervous about it, exactly where I'd be selling it right here.
Okay. And then TBIO.
These guys do legs, right? They're working on Tiger Woods.
No, I'm kidding. That's a bad joke on tibia, tibio. Sorry. Again, you're got an uptrend going here. If that daily stochastic recycles, you can try it. Very good. Any others, David, or
hey,
shall we? Yes, yes.
This is Barrett.
Barrett,
how
are you?
You're doing good, man. This has been a great call. Really appreciate the back and forth with you, Jeff and Bob. That was really interesting stuff. And it leads me to a question that my team had when we were looking at some of our models and looking at value outperforming. In our mind, it makes sense that value would outperform or dividend stocks would outperform and reopening stocks because of interest rates rising. Short duration stocks do better than long duration stocks like growth. But one of our questions is really focused on financials. We are hearing some anecdotal, you know, responses from some clients that are in the mortgage business or in the real estate closing business that forbearance could be an issue, and it's not now because they got pushed back till June from the federal government regulation. So question about that when it relates to financials, because you're really the only one that's been talking about that in the public world, so to speak. And then Savita Submarinian has really been pounding the table on financials, and to her credit, she's been right since about December about financials being her favorite sector. It just recently scored a perfect score, the first sector that performed the perfect metric score that she had going back 10 years. So can you opine a little bit about not just the financial chart, but just those comments that was made?
Yeah, I think, you know, the real question is going to be how forbearance ends. And from what I've heard, and I talk to people about this, I'm not an expert on it, Barrett, is that there will be essentially two classes of ending on forbearance. And this, again, these are what I've heard in terms of opinions. But there are still some legacy folks that have not been paying their mortgages for several years prior to the pandemic. And what I've been told is that they're going to do an RTC type of deal like they did when the SNL crisis hit on those people, and they'll be out of their houses, and those houses will be sold to hedge funds at lower prices so they can make some money on them, and they'll just wipe that problem out with the banks. Okay? And but the people that were unable to pay mortgages because of job losses due to the pandemic, they're going to tax some of those payments and stuff onto the back end of loans and generally make it easier for them. The other issue, and this is where I think it's going to be fascinating, is the difference between a mortgage originator and a mortgage servicer is quite large, and no one's talking about that. Bank of America is actually both, for example, and that's why we heard back at the start of the pandemic some people saying, well, I got a Bank of America mortgage, and they just basically told me not to worry about it. They put the payments on the back end, and everything's hunky-dory. And other guys said, wait a second, I'm getting a demand note for my entire mortgage. Well, the difference is if Bank of America is servicing a mortgage, i.e. they're the bank that is actually running the mortgage, but the mortgage is held with somebody other than Bank of America, Bank of America has to do what that other party says they have to do. And that's where the regulation and stuff is going to come in. We don't know the answer to that, okay? I'm really unclear on that, but I'm looking not so much at the financials, but again looking at the REITs, and I'm going to cover REITs in this week's weekly because I haven't done it in a bit. But the REIT ETFs and stuff are going to be sort of where the canary in the coal mine is for that. And right now, those REIT ETFs are trading decently, but still not in an exemplary fashion. So I think, Barrett, and the other thing I would mention about that, and this is one of the problems with, of course, government rules is, you know, the solution to this forbearance issue is not going to be a free market solution. It's going to be regulatory. Right? They're just going to decree what the solution is. So I think trying to anticipate exactly how that's going to materialize is a mistake. and that we just have to watch how the units are performing. And financials so far are performing pretty well, and REITs are performing less well, and that's where I have the concern.
Thank you. And then one other thing I wanted to ask you on Japan, you know, given the Nikkei is really a flawed system because of the, you know, it's average price, whatever, just like the Dow. What is your, do you have a target on the Nikkei? Or
I think the Nikkei, if you look at that stock chart that we published a few times, Barrett, and we can publish that again in the midweek, I think the target is new all-time highs on that.
Wow. New all-time highs.
You know,
so,
someone actually
objected
to me and said, well, golly, that's a generational bear market. I'm like, yeah, it started in 1989 and it's 2022. Isn't that a new generation here? There's this long silence. Like, yeah, it is.
I have some anecdotal evidence. Again, this is just anecdotal, but a client of mine in Shanghai, she's Okinawan, which is different than Japan, but she agrees wholeheartedly that the new generation of Japanese investors are taking over. No one wants the grandma bank stocks and holding, you know, 10-year Japanese treasuries anymore. Everybody's looking for technology. They want to be a lot like the rest of the world.
Well, let's see what happens. But again, secular bear market to me means a generation, 20, 25 years. And if you look at Japan, you realize that 2009 was 20 years from 89, and it did make a bottom there. It's been sort of working its way up, but it's a rounding bottom now on that yearly chart. That's a really interesting chart. There may be artificial things going on there that are going to prove me wrong. I don't know, but I'm a chartist, so what the heck?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Very good. I'm going to check and see.
I appreciate it.
Certainly, Barrett. I was at the donut shop yesterday. I thought of you. Other questions?
Rick, can I get one quote? SBSW?
Sam Boy, Sam Weirdo.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just... It's, I think you were on my Merrill Lynch call with Qualcomm, as I recall. That's still up nicely, Scott. You basically, as long as that stays above, let me just get this over to here. As long as that stays above 1530 or so, you've got a nice uptrend, and it probably won't go below 1750. So I'd stay with that. It's a hold, and I'd buy a daily recycle on that if you got it.
Yeah, it's a South African lithium, platinum, gold miner, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank God we're not being speculative here.
Thanks.
Sorry. Any other questions?
Fred, it's Paul.
Fred, a question.
Let's do Paul first. Paul?
Fred, I see you're looking for the 373 target by the end of March. That's about 4%. What would be your equivalent on Qs, given that they're going to be weaker in the current environment?
Whatever the close was at the end of December, right there.
End of December close. Got it.
Yeah. Just a little below it.
Much closer. Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, the Qs are down more. You saw what I wrote in the weekly. IYW from top to bottom was almost down 10%. And that, I mean, IYW is pure tech. One of the reasons we don't use XLK in our sector work is because it's got other stuff than tech in it. It's got the telecoms in it, too. IYW is pure tech.
Okay.
So, and that was down 9.5% from low to high in this correction so far. So, you know, naturally the Qs are going to be lower. And they'll probably close a little lower. But, again, Paul, and this is somewhat of a cop-out, I only keep my quarterly data and the models that I run on quarterly data on the S&P and the Dow. I don't keep it on the NASDAQ. So that's why I'm looking for it on the Spider.
So, but, okay, just for clarification, the end of December on the Qs is 313.74. We traded 311 this week. So you're saying that the SPYs can pull back much more than tech here. So you think that the sideways pattern for the larger names is pretty much settled in. We're closer to the lower end of the range.
We're close to the lower end of the range on that.
So if you're looking to do anything and you think the market's going to go down, don't freak out about tech as much as wait to buy the things that you you know, because for me, I'm looking to buy some more of the cyclical stuff. So wait for the 373 on those. Okay.
I would. Yeah, absolutely. And bear in mind again, Scott, or not Scott, Paul, observe the performance today of RSP versus SPY.
Yeah.
Right. That says the market is broadening out, and it's not broadening out into the FANG.
Yeah,
right.
I, you know, as you know, I use a lot of trend lines, and the channels from the Pfizer breakout day, November 9th, the lows,
yeah,
the fourth day after that, you know, to the lows in February, creates beautiful parallel channels,
yeah,
on the SPYs, on the Qs, which have just broken that, by the way, but also RSP. RSP hit the top end of that channel yesterday. So now we've successfully had the SPYs hit the top end of the channel. IWM hit it earlier this month. So I think, you know, your 373 call is perfect. I think you're right on. We'll see if we get there.
You know, and again, with all, and then we'll get to that last question, but golly, you know, I get some really nice signals if we do that. And I got to tell you, I want those signals. And that's a really bad way to analyze sometimes. I hit that. But it looks like it's set up to do it. We're overbought enough to do it. And if we do it, let's see what happens. But I think that would be great. Now, I heard one more question coming in before Paul, so have at it.
Hey, Fred, Vernon, Palantir, PLTR.
PLTR. And that, again, looks like it's right on support in this area. It also is new enough. You know, Vernon, you stay with that. You can even try to buy it. You've got a bad recycle. If you want to be really, really cagey, the next recycle above 20 on the daily stochastic, you buy it. And I'd just be a little eensy-weensy bit careful if the stock starts to go below 2250, which is not a bad benchmark.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Cool. Very good. Other questions otherwise going once?
Hey,
going twice? Sorry, I heard somebody. Yes, sir.
Hey, Fred, I have one for you real quick. Could you look at YY?
Why not? I'm sorry. I had to say that. I deserve to be beaten for that as well, and I know that. And at least I know. Again, you're on support. The moving averages are still positive coming together, but the stochastic hasn't come down quite enough for a recycle. If you start to buy this here, you might end up getting some lower. It's a hold for me until that recycles. Doesn't look
okay.
Terrible. But I wouldn't be rushing in on it.
But okay to buy once it recycles.
Okay to buy once it recycles. And, you know, if you're really, really eager, buy some here, but just realize that if it doesn't work, it's going to recycle. With this
okay.
pattern, it looks like it is going to try to recycle.
Okay. Thank you, Fred.
Gotcha. Very good. Other questions? Otherwise, we'll go once. We'll go twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for February 25th, 2021. Everybody have a great weekend. It's going to be a little rainy here in Georgia, but we should still have a good weekend. Thank you.